Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by Into the Light. This is very appropriate for this one because it is a brand new, never heard before FMM that I just found squirreled away on the internet. It probably hasn't been played in 76 years. How about that?
Well, how does Dream Girl look today, Willie?
She's still a best horse in this track, Mr. Hillary.
How long have you been handling her, Willie?
Ever since you bought her, don't you remember?
I'm paying you a great deal of money to train these horses of mine. When do they start paying off?
Well, you can't expect a winner in every race, Mr. Hillary.
I'm familiar with the law of averages. That's why I've asked my question.
If you don't like the way I've been taking care of your stable, you can get yourself another trainer.
Not so fast. We have a contract.
You're a liar. Break it.
No. You've been a trainer for 20 years. You've been with my stable for 2. And in that period of time, you've made your worst record. What I'm trying to do is figure out why. Where's the answer?
You don't buy your horses right. I got bad horses to work with. Dream Girl's your best one. See? She agrees with me.
Yeah, very touching. But since you can't accept a subtle hint, suppose I come to the heart of what I'm talking about.
What do you mean?
Simply, Willie, that you've been doctoring up my horses. I've got proof, and I'm going to see you put away for more years than you've been racing.
Oh, no, you're not.
Put down that shoe, you fool!
Sure, I'll put it down. Oh! So long, Hillary. The race is over.
When did you find the body here in the stable, Willie?
Right before the first race. I was coming to look over Dream Girl before she was posted.
Where was the body lying?
There, by the door. There's a pile of straw almost covering it.
Why do you suppose Dream Girl attacked Mr. Hillary?
I don't know. I've always noticed she got sort of restless whenever he'd come in the stable.
Look at the marks on Hillary's skull, Willie. Notice the imprint of the heels on his chin and cheeks, and the mark at the top of the shoe on his forehead?
She really must have struck out on him.
Where's the horse now?
In the next stall.
Mind if I look at her?
Oh, go right ahead. She's in here.
Hello, girl. Hey. There's blood all over her right hind hoof.
Yeah, I seen it there before, but I left it alone for you to look at.
How long did you wait to call me after you discovered Hillary's body, Willie?
Oh, I dashed to the nearest phone. I didn't waste a minute.
Yeah. Where'd you find the horse?
In the next stall with the body.
And you've nothing else to tell me?
Of course not. What else could that be?
A confession, Willie, as to how you murdered Hillary.
How does the inspector know that Willie, Dream Girl's trainer, killed his employer? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
Okay, that has to be one of the best stories we've had, but it lacks any kind of evidence that I can see. We know that Willie killed his boss. We even know how he did it. But what did the detective see that we didn't? And what was the key piece that they failed to tell us or show us? I guess we should go with that old adage, never try to pin a murder on a horse.
And now, back to our story.
And you crazy inspector, you can see for yourself that Dream Girl killed Hillary. Look at the imprint of the horseshoe on his head.
I did look at the imprint, Willie. That's all I need to send you to the chair. As a man who's spent his life around horses, Willie, you should have known better. A horse always kicks up with its hind hoof, Willie, not down. Therefore, if Dream Girl had attacked Hillary, the imprint of her heels would have been embedded in the forehead and not in his chin.
Well, I'm sure
It's all right, Willie. I know what you mean. You killed Hillary with one of Dream Girl's shoes. Perhaps this will teach you a lesson, Willie. Never try to pin a murder rap on a horse.
That actually makes sense. Horses can only kick up because their feet are always on the ground. Well thought out, and I have to admit this was a good 5-minute mystery. I wonder if there are others hiding out there somewhere. Time will tell. This 5-minute mystery was brought to you by Into the Light.
What's that you said?
Welcome to the podcast. We have been into the woods, into the unknown, into the darkness, and now we head into the light.
Well, it's about time.
No, this has nothing to do with time. It's all about the light. What is it really? Should we fear it? Sylvia and I talk about what it means to us, and we have ghost stories to go with it.
Well, this is odd.
No, not at all. In fact, I think you will find it quite amazing.
That could be one word for it, or it could just really be odd.
Have a little faith. We also have two light stories sent in by you that stars a creature of light and a ribbon of light.
Well, that sounds real interesting.
We can only hope. Every once in a while, I go read the reviews that you guys leave. I found this one last week titled One of the Best. It was left by Crack Junkie via Apple Podcasts on August 17th. Goes like this. This podcast includes a little of everything. So entertaining, and it really does take you away from today. Recommended. Well, thank you, Crack Junkie, for the nice review. I really do appreciate it. Reviews are great, and they really do help make podcasts grow. So if you have a minute, why not leave a review or rate the show? It goes much further than you think. A few weeks ago, Thomas Day from Alaska asked for the podcast download numbers in Norway. At that time, the number was zero. However, I happened to check again, and lo and behold, we now have 27 downloads in that country.
Amazing!
In the surrounding areas, Sweden has 6, Finland has 20, and nearby Russia has jumped all the way up to 2. How about that? I just can't get over how far the podcast goes. One last thing before we get to the rest of the show. I'm looking for your ideas, questions, and stories for the various segments. Things like questions for Sylvia, who will be joining us in just a few minutes, and Jason, who is scheduled to be here in 2 weeks. I'm looking for stories about UFOs, and coming up in a few weeks, we're going to have our next Into show called Into the Waters. I'm going to let you imagine what that one is going to be all about. Now let's get on with the show. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? Dragons of Autumn Twilight. Dragonlance Chronicles Book 1 by Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman. Some books have a very special place in our hearts. We hold their stories close as if they were our very own. This book is one of those for me. I found it during a very dark time in my life. A friend wanted to cheer me up, so he took me to Powell Books in downtown Portland. Powell's is an iconic location in Portland. Famous authors, poets, and citizens have come here from around the world to visit. that day, I bought this book, and for the next few days, I couldn't put it down. It tells the epic story of 8 heroes who have come to save the world. Oh, and yes, they have to face dragons and draconians to do it. Here's a sample from near the beginning of the book.
Tico Whalen straightened her back with a sigh, flexing her shoulders to ease her cramped muscles. She tossed the soapy bar rag into the water pail and glanced around the empty room. It was getting harder to keep up the old inn. There was a lot of love rubbed into the warm finish of the wood, but even love and tallow couldn't hide the cracks and splits in the well-used tables or prevent a customer from sitting on an occasional splinter. The inn of the last home was not fancy, not like some she'd heard about in Haven. It was comfortable. The living tree in which it was built wrapped its ancient arms around it lovingly, while the walls and fixtures were crafted around the boughs of the tree with such care as to make it impossible to tell where nature's work left off and man's began. The bar seemed to ebb and flow like a polished wave around the living wood that supported it. The stained glass in the window panes cast welcoming flashes of vibrant color across the room. Shadows were dwindling as noon approached. The inn of the last home would soon be open for business. Tika looked around and smiled in satisfaction. The tables were clean and polished. All she had left to do was sweep the floor. She began to shove aside the heavy wood benches as Otik emerged from the kitchen, enveloped in fragrant steam.
"Should be another brisk day, for both the weather and business," he said, squeezing his stout body behind the bar.
He began to set out mugs, whistling cheerfully.
"I'd like the business cooler and the weather warmer," said Tika, tugging at a bench. "I walked my feet off yesterday and got little thanks and less tips. Such a gloomy crowd. Everybody nervous, jumping at every sound. I dropped a mug last night and, I swear, Retark drew his sword."
"Pah!"
Otik snorted.
"Retark's a solace seeker guard. They're always nervous. You would be too if you had to work for Hedrick, that faint—"
"Watch it,"
Tika warned. Otik shrugged.
"Unless the High Theocrat can fly now, he won't be listening to us. I'd hear his boots on the stairs before he could hear me."
But Tika noticed he lowered his voice as he continued.
"The residents of Solace won't put up with much more, mark my words. People disappearing, being dragged off to who knows where. It's a sad time."
He shook his head. Then he brightened.
"But it's good for business."
Lifelong friends, they went their separate ways. Now they're together again, though each holds secrets from the others in his heart. They speak of a world shadowed with rumors of war. They speak of tales of strange monsters, creatures of myth, creatures of legend. They do not speak of their secrets. Not then. Not until a chance encounter with a beautiful, sorrowful woman who bears a magical crystal staff. She draws the companions deeper into the shadows, forever changing their lives and shaping the fate of the world. No one expected them to be heroes, least of all, them. That is Dragons of Autumn Twilight, and you can have this book today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. Audible is offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get Dragons of the Autumn Twilight today. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our theme for the show this time is Into the Light. And without any hoopla whatsoever, here is our first story. Hello, Ron. I know my story is pretty short. I call it Into the Light, and I hope you like it. I live in a Texas town, and I know how you like to research the names. They say we do everything big in Texas. I've never agreed with that. I say we do everything weird. I live in Jot'em Down, Texas. There have been people here since the late 1800s. A store was built in the 1930s called the Jot'em Down Gin Corporation, after the fictional store in the radio show Lubb and Abner. Later, the highway department used the name to identify the area, and it has stuck to this day. My story is this. I own and operate a small farm. We grow mostly corn and some soybeans. One night, I was working late tilling a field for planting the next day, when a very strange thing happened. I looked up into the night sky, and a ribbon of light descended down. It hit the ground like a lightning bolt, but it made no sound. I pulled my tractor to a stop and watched in awe. This was the early 80s, and cell phones and digital cameras were not a thing. I have only my memory of the thing as proof. I walked up to it and stretched out my hand. It tingled a bit and then was gone. I've often wondered what would have happened if I had walked into the light. J. Jackson from Jot'em Down, Texas. I have to wonder what would have happened as well. Would you even be writing us this story? It boggles the mind. Thank you for your story, Jackson. It truly is amazing. This next story comes from Michael Lambert. Mike lives in San Antonio, Texas, and shares his story with us via a Facebook post. He has titled his story, Zipline Angel. Hey Ron, I saw your tweet asking for stories about NDEs or Into the Light. Here's mine. This was around 2008. My family was spending the day at an apple orchard. There was a pretty amazing zip line there, and I guess I was talking crap to a kid in line behind me because the next thing I know, I'm on the ground in complete darkness. The boy had apparently gotten angry and given me quite a shove. I flew off the platform and landed on the ground some 40 feet below. I heard some strange sounds, almost like violin strings being plucked, and then I felt like I was floating. I opened my eyes and I was looking down at my body on the ground below me. I could see all the trees in the orchard, the open field where I landed, and my mother running towards me, screaming. My brother got to me first. He was chuckling like an idiot, saying,
"Everything's gonna be just fine."
I watched as the story unfolded, as they placed me on a stretcher and carried me to an ambulance. I could see them grabbing a respirator and affixing it to my head. They worked on my body with all manner of things. I couldn't hear what they were saying. In fact, all I could really hear was that strange violin music. I felt a hand on my shoulder and turned to see a light. It was shaped sort of like a human, and it felt warm, comforting. I so badly wanted to go with it. And then, all of a sudden, I was thrown back into my body. I felt pain like nothing I had ever felt before. I opened my eyes and looked at the ambulance responders holding the exact same things I saw from above. One of them smiled and said,
"Welcome back, young man."
I was taken to the hospital and ended up spending several weeks there recovering. I had a fractured skull and many broken bones. The crazy part of all of this was that I had a dream that night of riding that whole zip line. At the end was that strange humanoid light ready to catch me. Michael Lambert, San Antonio, Texas. What a great story. I think your light just may have been your guardian angel. These type of stories fascinate me because they need no proof. It happened, and that's the end of it. The proof comes from the facts. Thank you for sharing your story with us, Mike. Well, those are your stories for this time. If you have a story that you want to share, like Michael did, head to the main website at ronsamazingstories.com and click on the story submission banner. And please remember to name your tale and tell me where you're from. Make your stories our story. We all love a good story, but what we truly crave is a ghost story. It's time now for Ghost Stories with Sylvia. Sylvia Schultz is a librarian and author by day. But at night, she becomes a ghost hunter. Following a lifetime spent in the pursuit of the weird and the strange, her nonfiction works include Ghost of the Illinois River, Fractured Spirits, 44 Years in Darkness, Hunting Demons, and The Spirits of Christmas. We now cross over the veil and join Sylvia as she tells us more tales from the unknown. Are you there, Sylvia?
I'm here. Come on in, Ron.
Thank you, Sylvia. How are you?
I am fantastic. My garden is just going gangbusters at this time of year.
It's getting close to harvest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm already picking tomatoes and cucumbers and got a cantaloupe out of the garden the other day, which is wonderful.
Now, wait a minute. You have cantaloupes in your garden?
Yeah, and I've got a couple of mini watermelons on the vine that aren't quite ready to pick yet, but they're coming along.
I'm impressed. I've heard that cantaloupes are very difficult to get to grow. Is that not true?
Well, I've never had a problem with them. The cantaloupes I've grown have always been nice and sweet. And the neat thing about cantaloupes is they pick themselves.
Yeah.
When they're ripe, they just slip off the vine and you walk around and just find one lying on the ground, which is exactly what I did the other day. I was working in the garden and picking tomatoes and looked down and said, oh, that's not attached to the vine. I guess that must be ripe.
Wow. Watermelons I've seen grown, and it seems like they're not too bad, but I've never heard of anyone successfully growing cantaloupes. Probably my lack of any kind of thumb that is other than not green. All right, Sylvia. Well, we have an interesting topic this time. We don't have an email from anybody, but okay. We have had a couple people suggest that we talk about going into the light, or basically into the light. So I decided to name this entire podcast Into the Light. So let's start with what that means to Sylvia Schultz.
Ah, well, it has meant different things to me at different times of my life. I was raised religious, so when I would read about somebody going into the light when I was a kid and growing up, I just automatically assumed it was heaven and the pearly gates and St. Peter greeting you and all those wonderful things that we associate with heaven. And now that I'm older and can make my own decisions about that sort of thing, I've kind of moved away from just heaven because I realize that there are lots of religions and lots of afterlife theories, and they're all valid. They all lead to the same place, in my opinion. And I just see going into the light now as resting, going to a place of safety and warmth after maybe what might have been a hard life, and being in a place where you are welcomed by those who've gone before you.
Family members and such.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Let's talk about it from the ghost hunter's point of view. Now, you told me something. We were talking before, and you told me something about how when you are ghost hunting at the Pollock Hospital, you don't use flashlights. Or rather, you do. Well, you tell them about it.
Okay. Well, when we are in the basement of the Pollock Hospital, the powers that be always insist that any ghost hunter that goes down to the basement put a piece of red cellophane on the end of their flashlight, or we hand them out. We hand out flashlights that have red cellophane taped to the end of the light. The reason for this is that for some odd reason, the spirits in the basement are very particular about not wanting to go into the light. And there are different reasons why spirits would resist this. They might be afraid of being judged. That's the most common reason, I think.
Mm-hmm.
During their life, they've always heard a very religious interpretation of going into the light, and they interpret that as going in front of God or Jesus or the Trinity and being judged for the bad things they've done in life. That's very, very common for psychic mediums to say that when they're speaking to spirits. Oh, I don't want to go into the light because I'm afraid I'll get judged. So for whatever reason, the spirits in the basement of the Pollock Hospital do not like white light. If you go down there with a white flashlight and leave it on for more than a few seconds, your paranormal activity is just going to shut down almost immediately.
Done for the night.
But if you go down with a red flashlight, a red filter on your flashlight, you can turn it on to check equipment. You can turn it on to find your way in the dark. And the paranormal activity is going to continue on just as if you hadn't turned on the light. They really don't mind the red lights for some reason. That's interesting.
Is that part of the reason that ghost hunters work in the dark mostly then?
The reason ghost hunters work in the dark is because at nighttime, there are fewer radio waves bouncing around. It's usually quieter. There aren't as many people driving on the roads or moving around in the area where you want to be investigating. It's just quieter at night, which is why we tend to investigate at night. It doesn't really have anything to do with the lights or the flashlights or whatever.
What does into the light mean to the average ghost hunter? How do they interpret it? Is it different for each person, or is it something that is universal, that everybody agrees that this is what it means?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I think people, ghost hunters, are pretty much in general agreement that into the light means something good. Into the light means that a spirit is finding release. There are ghost hunters who are, they tend to be more on the religious side. I knew one pretty closely a few years ago, and she was one of the investigators that felt that they had the power to entice spirits to go to the light, to encourage them to seek the light and follow it. I have no problem with that. When you go ghost hunting at the Pollock, we encourage people not to send spirits into the light because our philosophy is they're here because they want to be here. But so many spirits are not earthbound. They can go back and forth. And when they, again, this is just purely theoretical blue skying, but I feel that if a spirit is earthbound and they can be encouraged to go to the light, they will find release and peace. And that's not a bad thing. And then once they have found that, they realize that they can go back and forth. They can visit a place where they've had happy memories and then go back into the light, the Summerlands, heaven, whatever you want to call it. But in general, it's a good thing.
Real briefly, can you remind folks why people want to come back to the Pollock Hospital? Briefly.
Oh, the Pollock Hospital and the Peoria State Hospital in general is, for most of its history, it was a very welcoming place. It was a place where patients were cared for like family. I mean, you say haunted mental asylum, and your mind automatically goes all American Horror Story on you.
Exactly.
And you think that this is a place of abuse, and the Peoria State Hospital was not. It was a place of welcome. It was a place of refuge. It was an asylum in the finest, oldest sense of the word. It was a place where people came for safety and good treatment.
And something else that you have told me is that the spirits that you run into, I've never heard you talk about a malevolent spirit at the Pollock Hospital.
There's one in the basement that's kind of prickly, but I wouldn't call him malevolent. He's just retained the personality that he had in life, which was kind of bossy and overbearing, but that's about it. And then there's one in the upstairs hallway, Heavy Boots, we've nicknamed him. And again, looking at the historical records, we figured out who this guy probably was, and it was a patient who attacked another patient and without provocation, and the other patient picked up a floor polisher and beat him to death with it. So yikes. We're pretty sure that's the spirit of this guy that got beaten to death with a floor polisher. He wasn't expecting it. Death came very quickly and very violently. So that's why he's still there. But he has retained the personality that he had in life. He was in his mid-20s. He was a young guy who was confined to a tuberculosis ward. He probably wasn't very happy about that. And he is just full of vinegar.
Wow.
So what are your thoughts on this, Ron? How do you feel about going into the light?
Mine? You want me to? Well, I'm not a ghost hunter.
It's a dialogue. Everyone has an opinion on going into the light.
All right. Well,
it's something we're all going to do. So yes, everyone has an opinion.
I do have an opinion. Actually, I have a story that I personally have experienced that happened to me.
Really?
Yeah, it happened to me in 1982.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a while
share.
Ago, but would you like to hear it?
Please share. Yeah.
Well, okay. So I was alone. I was sitting watching some TV, and the screen kind of went all white, and it started speaking to me in this weird ghostly voice. It was the strangest thing. It was odd. And there was a little girl, and she kept saying to me, "They'll be back. They'll be back." Or maybe it was "They're back." I don't remember. But she was running around, and there was this evil creature. He was bad, 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 bad man. And he was trying to keep all the other ghosts that were with this little girl, trying to keep them away from going into the light.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was trying to stop them. He wanted to hold them here on the earthly plane to keep them from being happy and moving on and they were all sad and being, you know, they were acting out, doing horrible things, breaking things, you know, poltergeist type things. You know what I mean?
Oh, kind of like a poltergeist.
Yeah, and it was just awful. And she was running around scared to death of this guy. And there happened to be a psychic with me in the room. Did I mention that?
No, you didn't.
Oh, there was a psychic sitting next to me. I'm sorry, I may not have mentioned that. She was a little gal, and she was telling, and she was talking to the TV, and she was telling the little girl, "Don't run into the light. Don't run into the light. Stay away from the light." And and it was contrary to everything that I had thought about the light. You want to go into the light, but
sure.
But she was adamant. Don't go into the light. So the little girl's running around. You can hear her running around. It was terrifying. It was truly terrifying. And, well, I got to tell you, I screamed.
Oh, well, yeah. It sounds terrifying.
It was, yeah.
You know, Ron, it just sounds awfully familiar, too.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, it kind of does. Where have I heard that story before?
So you've heard that story before, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to remember. You said something about poltergeist.
You got me. Yeah, that's kind of one of the plot lines of the movie Poltergeist in 1982. Great movie, by the way. Absolutely wonderful. Was nominated for all kinds of awards, including Oscars. And
nice.
It was produced by Steven Spielberg. I mean, how can you go wrong with a movie that was produced by Steven Spielberg?
Exactly. He's a master.
Yeah. Great film. But in all honesty and truthfulness, that is the first time I heard any mention in my life about the light and walking into the light. Now, as my life progressed, and it has since then, since 1982, what happened is I was curious about what that meant, and I started doing some research on NDEs. For those of you who don't know, that's near-death experiences. I've read a couple books on the subject, and it seems like that when you're near death, you do see a light, and you have a choice whether you're going to walk into it or not. Beyond that, I really don't have a view. I don't think of it as religious or non-religious, could even be scientific as far as I'm concerned, but I do believe that people see that and that it is an end-of-life experience. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
So whether good or bad, I you know, it's hard to say. I've heard stories that go the other way where people have gone into a dark spot and have found themselves in hell.
I've heard a couple of those stories, too.
And usually I haven't heard any lights associated with that. So I don't know that I will understand it until that fateful day when I walk into it myself and I go, oh, that's what that was. And so yeah. I don't really have an opinion. As far as Poltergeist, in the end of that movie, the psychic called all of those tied down ghosts and spirits to walk into the light, leaving that malevolent creature without any followers, which we know in Poltergeist 2 made him very unhappy.
I like it when horror movies have redemptive endings.
Yeah.
You don't find that very often in horror movies, and that's encouraging.
Yeah. Well, and it's an absolutely wonderful film. I don't know, you know, I haven't seen it for a few years now, and I don't know how it stacks up against the horror genre these days, but I do know that it is considered a cult classic, bare minimum, and it is considered a classic. And one of the interesting things about that film is there's a scene with a, I think it's a clown doll. And the clown doll attacks these two children. And,
oh, yay.
Yeah, oh, yay. And it is listed as the 84th most scariest moment in movie history.
Oh, I can believe that. I would put it way up more higher on the list than 84.
Well, you know,
they didn't ask me.
Well, that's what they say. And of course, the film was hugely successful. And but, you know, just a great film.
Oh, yeah.
So I know we have two stories. One's called Hello, Charlie, and the other one is What the Dog Watched. So Sylvia, I'm going to turn it over to you for Hello, Charlie.
Okay. Now, oddly enough, these two stories both came from the same source. There is a horror writer called Chuck Palahniuk, and he is known for what they call splatterpunk. It's really gory, nasty horror. And it's so odd to find him writing with such compassion about death. These two stories come from his latest book called Consider This. And it's a book in which he talks about the art of writing and life stories and experiences. He just sits down and shares this with his readers. It's a departure from his fiction, and I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. So the first story, Hello, Charlie, is this. A friend of his told him about the friend's father was dying, and the friend sat at his father's deathbed with a tape recorder and prompted him to tell old family stories for posterity. Near the end, it was just the two of them and the tape recorder, the friend, Rick, coaxing his dad to keep talking. A point came when Rick's father paused and said, "I know you want more stories, but I need to see what Charlie wants." He said his brother Charlie, Rick's uncle, had been standing in the corner of the room waiting patiently for some time. Of course, to Rick, the corner in question looked empty. It was only Rick and his father in the room. Plus, his uncle had been dead a long time. He watched as his father bid Charlie hello and asked his business. And at that point, Rick's father, without another word, closed his eyes, and died.
Hmm.
The scene was caught on the tape recorder, but Rick has never had the nerve to rewind it and listen to what was on the tape.
Oh, but why?
Right?
That would have been one of the world's first EVPs.
Exactly!
Imagine if he had caught something. Oh, where's that tape?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Yeah, find it. Actually, I have a personal story that's somewhat close to this. When my great aunt was passing away, my uncle was in the hospital room with her, and he said that she kept talking about three people that were in the room. And we identified two of the people as her parents, my grandma and grandpa Bonhoff, but the third guy, a male, was someone we couldn't put our fingers on. And I talked to a friend of mine who knew a spirit. He was a psychic medium. He knew a spirit called Bautreau, who was a French trapper in the 18th century. Bautreau was a spirit guide. He was what they call a psychopomp of spirit who comes to deathbeds to escort a newly passed spirit into the afterlife.
Hmm.
And I had asked David to ask Bautreau to make my aunt's passing easier. And I'd forgotten about it. And then my uncle told me about these figures at my great aunt's deathbed. And I thought to myself, whoa, what if that male figure that we can't identify, maybe that's Bautreau?
Well, if that was you, Bautreau, I hope you made Sylvia's aunt's passing easier.
Yeah, so.
All right, what's our second story? What the dog watched?
Okay, this is just a little one. It's also from Chuck Palahniuk. And he says that Lisa tells of her brother's deathbed, where his dog began to howl at the moment of his demise. The dog fell silent, but gazed upward at something, then turned and seemed to follow this something, always gazing up at the ceiling through room after room until the dog reached the open back door. There, the dog stood on the porch and stared as if following the path of something into the sky.
Wow. We've talked about this before and many times, how dogs can actually impact or see things, cats as well, that we just can't. So I have no reason to doubt that story. Now, I think you said that recently, didn't you bring your dog to a ghost hunt for the first time?
I did. I recorded it for Lights Out, and it can be found on the Lights Out page at the COVID-19 edition of Lights Out. I brought my dog, Belle. She's a Belgian Malinois, and I brought her to the Pollock Hospital. I was not able to get inside, but I had her on the grounds of the hospital, and I called out to Chris, who is my friend who lives in the basement, and I asked him if he had ever had a dog. And I captured through the spirit box, I got the answer, we sure did. So he was happy that I had brought my dog along. He was very pleased about getting to pet a dog.
Are you ever going to do that again?
Oh, I might, sure.
I just think it's fascinating because I don't know why ghost hunters wouldn't do more of that because, you know, they have their cameras, they have their boxes, their ghost boxes, they have their meters, they have all this equipment. But wouldn't a dog be a built-in monitor?
You know, I really think that having a dog along on an investigation would be a very valuable tool. I've given it a lot of thought. I just don't know how you would train the dog to alert to when there's a ghost around. I mean, if we could do it just like Lisa did and just watch the dog for strange behavior if he was staring at something. And
I think that's all you need to do. What do you do with a meter, Sylvia?
Well, yeah, you look at the meter, see if something weird's going on.
Okay, what do you do with the night cameras and the night vision?
Yeah, watch the camera, see if there's something
weird going on.
You watch
the video back. What about recordings? What do you do, Sylvia?
Yeah, well, looking at something weird going on. My husband's and I, our wedding anniversary is New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And we were celebrating 20, 2018. It was New Year's Eve 2018-19. And we had a couple people over. And I think it was one of the cats walked into the living room and just started staring at a certain point in the room. And everybody, of course, joked, oh, maybe there's a ghost there that the cat's looking at. And I just quietly excused myself. And I went into the kitchen where nobody was around. And I said, so, is there anybody around?
And I could see you doing this
technique that a friend taught me of using your own body as a pendulum or as a way to find out if something is going on. You ask yourself an answer you know the yes to. I have long blonde hair, and your body will tilt forward a little to signify a yes answer. And you can ask a question that you know is a no answer. You say, well, I really love mushrooms on my pizza, and my body will tilt backwards a little bit. So I did that in the kitchen. I didn't want anybody else to know I was doing this. But I said, is there a spirit in this house with us? And my body tipped forward a little bit so that
really?
I had to take a step to keep from falling over. And I think I asked if it was my mother who passed when I was 5. And I think I got a yes answer to that. So somebody was there.
Huh. Well, just to put some closure on that, I've always thought, why there isn't a show, one of the ghost hunting shows, that have made use of animals. And maybe there is. So if somebody out there knows, let me know, because I'd be very interested in watching that, whatever episode it was.
That'd be a super cool show.
And just to see, because to me, dogs or cats, I wouldn't recommend a cat for that. but a dog, they're so attentive. And they will sit hours just waiting for something to happen. And I just think that they would be the perfect companion for a ghost hunter. I really believe that. I do.
I do too.
Well, good. All right. Well, Sylvia, let's talk about the blog. This week you had just kind of a simple one. It was every few hours, your central nervous system automatically switches which nostril you primarily breathe through. I thought, that's a reach, Sylvia. That one was a reach.
Well, if you sit and concentrate on your nasal breathing or breathing through your nose, you can tell which nostril is doing more breathing. And I've done this on occasion. That was one of the first weird facts I learned. I just have not used it till now. Yeah, and you can tell which one's working a little bit harder, and it's usually a different one. Mm. I just thought it was fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I would, I may not go that far, but but it is this week's blog.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us what's going on with Lights Out. I'm kind of excited about this one, actually.
Oh, this upcoming Lights Out, we are going to take a haunted boat trip on the river in the Wisconsin Dells. It'll be fun.
I got a question.
Okay. What's your question?
On this haunted boat trip, by chance, was it the infamous ducks, you know, the amphibious transportation that they use there?
No, this was just a great big passenger, like an overgrown John boat sort of thing with chairs up on the deck.
Didn't go off water and on land?
No.
I would have been pretty excited if it had, because you see, my father, who was a school teacher, during the summers, drove those ducks, half car, half boat, during the summer, and he was the captain,
fun.
And he would lead tourists up and down. I don't know if it's called the Wisconsin River, but that's what he did, and he would do that every summer.
What a fun job.
And that was at the Wisconsin Dells. So when I read that you were taking a haunted boat trip, I was really hoping. Now, that one's going to be a while before it's out, or what?
That's the next Lights Out, so it's coming up.
Okay, so we don't have a set date for that one yet.
No, I'm hoping to get it out by the time this episode drops, but...
All right, Sylvia, if I wanted to find out about the blog or subscribe to the blog and find out about Lights Out, where might I go to find those things out?
Well, the very best place to go is sylviaschultz.wordpress. That's S-H-U-L-T-S. And on the top of the page, there are all sorts of wonderful little tabs that say Lights Out and Paranormal Nonfiction. And you can subscribe to Lights Out on YouTube if you want the pretty pictures to go along with it. Or you can listen to it wherever you listen to Ron's Amazing Stories. It's also in podcast form.
Cool. I did want to say something about your latest podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Oh, my gosh, Sylvia. I'm going to say it here, folks. Without a doubt, that is Sylvia's best podcast to date.
Oh,
bar none. I absolutely loved that one. And I'll tell you why.
Please do.
I felt like I was with you.
Ah, cool.
I really did, because what you did was you had a storyteller there, and I'm assuming he was some sort of guide or someone that was there, but you held a mic in front of this guy, and he told us the story of a vampire head that was cut in half. It was absolutely incredible. That story was great. And that guy was evil. And he was the epitome of evil. He got what he deserved, having his head cut in half. And if you want to find out why his head was cut in half, you're going to have to listen to Sylvia's podcast.
It's definitely a story worth listening to.
The second thing that I loved about this podcast was the interaction with, I think her name was Pam. Is that right?
Penny.
Penny, yeah. She was incredible. I don't know if she was psychic or what, but she was with you the time experiencing your ghost hunting, and it was just fabulous. And I swear, when you asked the question, and I'm not going to tell all the details, but you asked the question, what was the name of your father? I swear I heard an EVP in there that you did not mention. I heard something a little extra.
Oh.
And I think you should go back and listen to that again, because
I will.
There's something there. It's right after you say that. And that was great. And something else I really loved was when you were doing some, collecting some EVPs, I'm assuming, you could hear the other ghost hunters working in the background.
Yeah.
You could hear them doing their jobs. And I know that it wasn't probably advantageous for you trying to get EVPs, but still, you get to feel what it feels like to be a ghost hunter there. That was incredible. And so by the time I was done, I felt like I had been on an investigation. That's how good it was.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
I really, really enjoyed that. And so, folks, go listen to it. Go to sylviaschultz.wordpress.com and listen to that episode. You will not regret it. You won't. The stories alone are worth it. And there are tons of them. I mean, it's not just stories. There are people there that she talks to that tell stories about experiences that they've had at the museum. Just an incredible episode. And there's pictures.
Well, thank you, Ron. That is very high praise, and I really appreciate it. And I'm delighted to share that experience with everybody.
Yeah, it is the Ripley's Believe It or Not episode. And it also took place in the Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah.
So, well, Sylvia, I think we had a lot of fun today.
As always.
I think we had more fun today than normal.
I think so. We got a lot of stuff talked about. We're talking about going into the light and movies and ghost hunting. It was great.
All right. Well, Sylvia, I want to thank you for being with us today.
We'll see you next time.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ghost Stories with Sylvia was brought to you by Gladys Goodies. I always have a great time talking with Sylvia, and I learn all kinds of new stuff. If you want to visit her on her home turf, head to sylviaschultz.wordpress.com. There you will find her blog and access to the podcast, Lights Out. I will have links available in the show notes. Thank you, Sylvia. Gladys Goodies treats are a 100% natural, nutrient-rich treat that pets love to eat. You can get your treats and some really cool swag for your dog and cat at gladysgoodies.com. And don't forget to use our very own promo code RONS. That's R-O-N-S. and you'll get a 20% discount on all of your purchases. That website again is GladysGoodies.com. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
Not so important times in history.
In this segment, we take a look at historical events that may otherwise go unnoticed. We look at history with a fish-eyed lens, giving a perspective that should provide no insight to anyone or any time. But it is historical, or hysterical, as the case may be. Join us now for this event in history. Some historical events aren't deemed significant enough to occupy chapters of a history book. But that doesn't mean they aren't fascinating. After all, weird things are always happening, from the Middle Ages to the present. There's always some strangeness happening, somewhere. For example, did you know that molasses once flooded the streets of Boston? Or that North Carolina was almost obliterated by accident? Thankfully, all these weird things that school didn't cover are still available on the internet. Here's one from Domino's Pizza. In the 1980s, Domino's Pizza introduced a mascot named the Noid. Its main goal, stealing pizzas and making your pizza delivery late. The slogan was, avoid the Noid. Unfortunately, there was a man with paranoid schizophrenia named Kenneth Noid, who thought this whole campaign was created to mock and persecute him personally. So one day, Noid entered an Atlanta Domino's location and took two employees hostage. During the five-hour standoff, he got hungry, so he ordered the employees to make him some pizzas. Of course, he didn't pay for any of them, thus inadvertently living up to the Noid's tendency to steal pizzas. He was eventually apprehended and no one was hurt. He spent time in a mental institution until his death in 1995. Meanwhile, Domino's retired the mascot due to what happened, and it was never mentioned again. How about that? Was episode number 451, and these are the people who made it great. Thomas Day, J. Jackson, Michael Lambert, and Sylvia Schultz. My thanks to all of you. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.